Accession number 22083, Real 9.
This is the fifth reel of a taped interview with Bill Mitchell in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 5th of the 7th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. We'll be talking around about February.
Yeah, it was February when we were in New Zealand, because I think we docked on my birthday, which is the 24th of February, and that's when my wound healed up.
What was it like then going back to Australia?
Well, it was only a short run from Wellington to, we went to Adelaide, and we docked out at Outer Harbour, and we were taken in onto land for by lighters of some sort. I forget exactly what they were now, and I spent a fortnight in Dawes Road Hospital in Adelaide. I really wasn't getting any treatment then because I'd healed up, you see. But we used to get into Adelaide on leave almost every day.
What did that involve?
I'd just go in, and if you wanted to see a picture show, you'd see it. I had a relative there that I didn't know that was there, and I went out and visited them. And I was supposed to go out and have a meal with them on the weekend, but we'd got orders that we were going to ship out on the day I was supposed to go there, so I rang them up and told them that I couldn't make it. I couldn't tell them where I was going, or well, I wasn't supposed to tell them anyway, but and that was that. We were taken down to the docks. I can't remember where we set off from. It must have been Outer Harbour again, because we went on an old tramp steamer, 10,000 tonner, which was a bit of a letdown from the Arangie and the Queen Mary. The Queen Mary was 80,000 tons, I think, and the Arangie would have been around about 40,000. And we went down to this 10,000 mole bearer, and they'd come around from Victoria, and they had aboard quite a few army wives and air force wives and that, and the whole lot of them were sick. They'd coming across the bight, you see, The old ship didn't smell too good with all the vomiting that about.
Had you been treated in kind, like you had been in Wellington? How had you been treated on your arrival to Australia?
Oh, well, it was just like being home again. We never really thought much about it, I don't suppose.
How did you feel about yourself, having been away and now you're coming back as a soldier that had his red badge of courage, all that sort of thing?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Everybody seemed glad to see us and treated us very kindly in Adelaide, and because being in Adelaide, the 2nd 43rd was a South Australian battalion originally, and You used to be walking down the street, and you'd hear somebody say, "Well, there's a second 43rd," and they sort of knew that we were there.
So coming back to Fremantle.
Oh, that was a trip and a half. I think it was the best trip of the war, as far as I was concerned. We were in cabins, and there would have only been about 15 to 20 soldiers on board, I suppose, that had come off the Arangi, and we were waited on by Singhalese sailors, and the meals were very good, but they were a bit light on, and I remember distinctly having an entree, and it was fish. We'd get a little square of fish like that, and of course I ate it in one bite just about, so I slipped my plate under my next door neighbour's plate, and when the waiter came back, I said, "I'll have my entree, please." And his eyes nearly fell out. And at any rate, he bought me another one, and I cleaned that up. Generally, the food was good, and we got beer, we could buy beer, and that from the canteen. And I suppose we were pretty lucky, because from Adelaide onwards, the trip across the Bight wasn't too bad. Not as far as I was, anyway. That was one trip that I wasn't seasick on.
What was it like to get back to Fremantle, seeing Fremantle?
Well, we came right into the harbour and went ashore there. Well, it was good to see the old gum trees and all that sort of stuff again. Makes you realise how clean our cities are in comparison to some of the others. Wellington was very good. Wellington and Adelaide had a bit over the Middle Eastern cities. The ones I saw was only Tel Aviv and Gaza. Gaza was a bit of a dump.
You mentioned that you weren't to have anyone there to meet you. What did it feel like to be one of those that didn't?
Well, none of them did. Evidently, things had kept pretty quiet, and there was no one there to meet anybody except army officials. And of course, they whisked us off. We finished up at Hollywood Hospital, and we were in a tent there for hours. I suppose it would have been about 4 or 5 weeks living in tents. And I did get one lot of leave to go home. I think it was 4 days, 4 or 5 days. Went up to Kalgoorlie. And
what was that like, getting off the train at Kalgoorlie?
Well, I just can't remember.
I
think there was somebody there, yeah. I think my brother-in-law was there. He was manpower. He was working in the power station up there. And I just can't exactly remember who did come. But somebody came and got me, I know, and took me out home.
And what was it like to see your family again?
Oh, well, great. Yeah, Mum was overjoyed, and of course I had 4 sisters there at that time, and they all made a fuss of us.
Were you able to talk to them about your experience at all?
We never did. We never talked much about it.
Why not, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Nobody asked any questions, so... But
to what degree do you think they felt awkward about asking you questions about your experience?
No, I suppose that's probably what it was. They didn't like to intrude. I can't ever remember them asking any questions about what went on. And that, I know that going back to the battle, word got back to Bowler that I'd been killed, and my dad heard it, but he never said anything to anybody until there was official notice came. And of course they got the notice that I was wounded, and that settled the fact that I wasn't killed. But,
did you speak to your father about conditions, about your wounds, that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, I used to take my shirt off and get round and get a bit of sun. It never embarrassed me to get round without a shirt on.
What did people say about the wound that they saw?
Oh. Well, I suppose it would only be the family that did see them, except once when I was after the war, I was swimming down at Naval Base, and we went to the hotel just in our shorts to have a beer, and one old joker, he said, you ought to put your shirt on and keep it covered up. So that's the only remark I ever heard about them. But I know different ones, they must have thought things were pretty crook. But being covered up, like in Wellington, the mate and I was walking down the street, and one old lady pulled us up and she said, "Who are you?" And we said, "We're Australians, we're off the hospital ship." And she said, "Well, there doesn't seem to be much wrong with you." And that was me. And the mate said, "Well, he's got a hole in his back that you could put your fist in." "Oh, has he?" she said. And that's the only time that I was ever spoken to about my wounds.
What sort of conditions did you see at home in regard how they were taking precautions, or how the war had affected the home life?
Well, I don't think that in Kalgoorlie, anyway, I don't think there was any precautions taken at all. I know in Perth they had all the buildings sandbagged, and anything that was likely to be damaged was well sandbagged up. But no, I don't think. Generally, there was very little precautions taken.
What about privation that your family may have been having put up with?
Or actually, I don't think there was you could hardly call them privations. Things were rationed, but well, what I could hear, they were adequate to get by with. There was sugar and tea and all that sort of stuff was rationed, but there didn't seem to be a great shortage of it.
So what then of the conditions of the war in regard to the Japanese? Your brother had been in the 2nd 16th. Did you know of where he'd gone, what he'd done?
I think, if I remember right, Kokoda was around about, probably around about the same time as Alamein. And I'd heard that he'd been wounded, but only superficially. I think he went to the creek to wash his Dixie out, and a sniper had a go at him and hit him in the hand, and that's the only thing he got out of it, other than the usual tropical. He did have scrub typhus, and there wasn't many that had scrub typhus that recovered from it. And of course he had malaria and dengue, and I caught up with him they were back on leave in Kalgoorlie the same time as I was, and our colonel that was in charge of the 43rd at Alamein, he had come from the 2nd 16th, and he came the day that my brother went to the 2nd 16th. And we always used to say, well, we swapped Barney for Colonel Wayne. And of course, when we were in Kalgoorlie, there was quite a few went Ackwilly, you know, like, which is absent without leave. And when I got back to the battalion, the old colonel said to me, what's your excuse? And I said, well, I'd met up with my brother out of the 2nd 16th. I said, we hadn't seen each other for about 18 months. And I said, we got on the beer and I missed the train. I didn't wash with him, though. He fined me £5 and 5 days' pay, which was a lot of money then.
What did your brother talk to you about in relation to the conditions that he'd experienced in Kokoda?
He said he reckoned that the conditions were worse than the Japs. And, you know, like he said, it used to rain for an hour and drip for 23, and he said, but whatever you do, don't underestimate them, because they weren't the 10 Japs to one Aussie that the talk was before, well, I can remember way back pre-war. I reckon one Aussie would be worth 10 Japs, but they were tough little buggers. There's no doubt about that.
So when was it that you found out that you were going to end up heading off that way?
Well, I spent... I was in Hollywood for about 5 weeks, I suppose, and then I went back to the unit, and of course as soon as you got back to the unit, everybody that had been wounded had to go for a board, and I got back there and I didn't want to be a B class. I either wanted to be in the army or out, and I went before the doctor, and He said, if you live to be 100, he said, those wounds will never worry you. I only wish he had them instead of me. But they haven't been real bad, but not like some other blokes have. I know when I was training, when I was carrying my rifle, my arm used to go to sleep. I couldn't use it. And I think that the powers that were at the time, they could see what was going on, and they made me LOB for the time I got to New Guinea until the Song River. That was the attack on Finchhaven.
I'd like to talk about that. Can we talk a little bit about the preparation, though, to go to New Guinea?
Well, see, while I was in hospital, they were carrying out jungle training up in Queensland. They spent quite a bit of time with landing barges down at Trinity Beach. Well, I only got back to the battalion about a fortnight before they sailed to New Guinea, so I missed all that. I never had any training whatsoever on barge landings or jungle warfare or anything. But as I say, I was lucky. I spent the first part of the New Guinea campaign on the beach at Buna, guarding the battalion stores and all that, like the men's packs, and at odd occasions we'd have to go out and help unload barges or ships, and one of the main jobs there was to stack 44 gallon drums of fuel. They had huge dumps, and as sure as God made little apples, finished a dump one night, the nips had come over and bomb it the next.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you could have gotten out of the army if you'd wanted, or do you feel as though you were made to go when you possibly didn't need to?
I think if I'd have wanted to get out, I could have got out. Because although there was that many blokes getting out that had been wounded, you know, they were getting out at the drop of a hat, and it came to the time when they shut the gate and they said there's too many experienced blokes getting out. So I wanted to get back to the battalion, so I went back, and I was prepared to put up with the whatever came.
I'm interested to discuss this with people. Once they've been in battle, there is this sort of itching to get back to the battalion or to get back with their mates to continue fighting. Why do you think that exists?
Oh, it's hard to say. Well, your mates, you get that friendly with two or three of the fellas, you know, like if you've got a pound, they've got a pound, and vice versa. And at one stage I had discussed with Howie, my mate, that after the war, if we got out of it, we'd go and get a block on the River Murray and start a vineyard up there. I suppose it all depends on the individual. Some blokes wouldn't want to get into a battalion even if they could. So.
What was your eagerness to go off and fight the Japanese? What were your feelings towards them?
Oh, I suppose you could call it hate. After the stories you heard that went on with Hong Kong and Singapore and those places, and what they did at Banker, and there was no question of taking prisoners in the island. So we knew what would happen to us if we were taken prisoners, and so we dished it out as good as they could. I think there was only one bloke taken prisoner that I know of by our crowd. No, there was two. And one gave himself up, and we thought he was saying he was a Javanese. He said, I thought he was saying Japanese. And he said, please plead with your commander for my life. This is on Labyrinth. And one of the blokes said, patted him on the shoulder, and he said, you're all right, mate. He says, he's a bit of chocolate. He gave him a lump of his chocolate. You know, we used to get chocolates in a tin, sort of a ration. And he gave him a bit of that. And then the MPs came and took him away, and we found out after that he was a nip. Well, I don't think he wouldn't have survived if they'd have known. Because, there was no love lost. No quarter asked and none given.
What about leaving Australia then to go to New Guinea? What was the process of that?
We took off from Townsville. I think it was the Manora. There was used to be a coastal boat in from Fremantle to Broome and Derby and those places. And we went up as far. We went to Milne Bay. And
what were your impressions of New Guinea, your first experience of?
Well, going up there the first time, I thought to myself, well, if I ever get an opportunity, I'll do this trip on a pleasure cruise, you know, to go past a little island with a palm trees and a white beach, and it was beautiful. And New Guinea was, what I saw of it, was mostly coastal, you know, like I was camped on the beach at Buna for, well, it would have been 2 months anyway.
What was it like then to be in this idyllic spot in a war situation?
Yeah, well, we used to get a bit of a taste of the war because there'd be a picture show on and all of a sudden they'd have to put the lights and everything out because there was an air raid coming on. I remember one night they come over and bombed us they were supposed to bomb us, but the bomb landed about a mile away. And it was very close to that. I told you about the stretcher bearer, Jimmy Jones, in Alamein. He was a mad keen fisherman, and he used to go fishing every night. And this damn bomb lobbed within 100 yards of him. So, and he was about a mile away from where the picture was.